Thank you very much, and thank all. Well, I guess we now know that we're going to be preserved for posterity. So regardless, just thank all of you for taking the time to come on. And let me start a little bit about, I was asked to talk to you about the year, obviously what's happening, what looks like it may happen legislatively and a little bit politically, and then take questions. So I'll sort of follow that format. Let me begin by stating the obvious. This is the most extraordinary year I've ever seen. I mean, it begins with impeachment, and which seems like a distant memory now. I mean, people hardly recall it or talk about it, and that was going to be the dominant issue of the year. What's happened is instead three, what I would call interlocking crises have developed, and they've defined both what Congress will do or has done, will do, and frankly, probably the election in the end. And those three crises, to be obvious, are coronavirus, first and foremost. Not sure what that is. Second, economic.
All right. I just muted everybody again. Congressman, if you'll unmute yourself and continue, I appreciate it. Sorry about the interruption. Somebody didn't have their phone on mute.
I was told I was all of a sudden muted. Had I misbehaved?
Yeah, no, I muted. Sorry, Congressman. I muted everybody. Somebody decided to play some hold music and couldn't find the mute button on their thing. So I muted everybody again. Okay. So you're free to go now.
Okay. Well, I'll pick up where I left off. I'm not sure what you heard, but basically the year's now defined legislatively and politically by what I would call three interlocking crises that we're all experiencing in our personal and business lives right now. And that's first, coronavirus. Second, the economic shutdown that it generated. And third, the terrible, ghastly death of George Floyd and the civil unrest that spun out of those things. And Congress actually reacted to those things with surprising speed and bipartisanship, and which is very unusual in this era and very unusual in an election year of any sort. And we passed pretty quickly four supplementals, and it did it in bipartisan fashion. The first dealt with additional funds where you would expect the National Institute of Health, Center for Disease Control, things of that nature to deal directly with the virus. The second, to try and both encourage and support small businesses to, when they had people that were ill, provide them with sick leave so they didn't come into work. That was about $104 billion item. The third, by far the most consequential of the four acts, is the so-called CARES Act, $2.3 trillion set of appropriations. And to give you an idea, we normally, federal budget's about $4.4 trillion, but that includes Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Those three programs are over 60% of all federal spending. And we don't appropriate those. You have to change the law to change them. So we actually appropriate about $1.4 billion a year, $1.3 to $1.4. So this single bill was more than we do in a year with 12 separate bills and literally hundreds of amendments. And this was passed in a matter of weeks. We won't go through all the components, but just quickly to give you an idea of all the moving parts, $500 billion loan program for large corporations, fully repayable to the federal treasury, but obviously very favorable interest rates and terms to try and help those companies. Airlines, the most notable, but companies like Boeing, absolutely essential to the defense of the country with hundreds and hundreds of subcontractors in every state in the union. A $350 billion program, which proved extraordinarily popular, and I want to thank all of you that participated in the Paycheck Protection Program. I know it wasn't easy, but it was clearly popular. In Oklahoma alone, over 65,000 loans, $5.6 billion deployed. And that program was quickly exhausted. And I'll talk about that in a minute. Then we had $350 billion in direct payments to individuals, $1,200 for everybody making less than $75,000 a year. And then that was prorated down up to $99,000, or if you were a couple, $150,000, and then prorated down, as well above that number. So very substantial individual assistance. lots of money put into unemployment, $600 increase beyond what unemployment pays through through the end of July. There were some real problems with that because we had some places where people were literally getting more money than they paid, and this averaged out to about $50,000 a year on an annual basis, so pretty decent salary. It's made reopening more difficult. And then lots of different support programs for various things, everything from $30 billion to education, $100 billion to hospitals, more money for testing. So an extraordinary bill in its range and complexity, and passed in 3 weeks. As I said, the PPP money was exhausted pretty quickly. The two parties differed over what to do. Republicans just wanted to put in more money to that program because we hadn't spent all the other. And by the way, it was $150 billion for state, local, and tribal government support. Talk about that in a minute, too. But the Democrats wanted additional money for governments, again, state, local, and tribal, additional money for hospitals, additional money for testing. They got two out of three. They got $75 billion for the hospitals. That was probably a good expenditure. They got additional $25 billion for testing. That, too, was probably a very good expenditure. We got more money in PPP, about $350 billion, roughly, and an additional $50 billion in emergency small business loans. So that was a big package, almost a $500 billion package. At that point, bipartisanship, I won't say ended, but let's just say was suspended. The Democrats wanted to move immediately to a fifth supplemental. The Republicans said, let's wait and see how this stuff is working before we make any more decisions of this magnitude. It's a lot of debt we're accumulating. I think the Republican position has proven to be correct. We saw better job numbers in May than we anticipated. We thought we would lose 8 to 10 million jobs. We increased by 2.5 million. Again, that's a good year, but remember, 40 million plus Americans have been put out of work, so we got a long way to go. And we also saw just today a 17% increase in retail sales. We're still well behind for the year, but that was a bigger number than expected. So the economy seems to be coming back a little bit faster. Democrats went ahead and put what they call the HEROES Act out there, which is a $3 trillion bill. Had lots of policy in it, everything from federalizing elections to individual payments to people that were in the country illegally, mandatory release for nonviolent criminals in the federal system. A lot of things that we can debate the merits of, but were pretty controversial and were certainly not going to be acceptable to a Republican Senate and a Republican president. So I think you have to say basically the Democratic legislative effort was both a political messaging bill and maybe the opening position in a negotiation. At that point, we had I can't overemphasize how awful what happened to George Floyd was. We've all seen it. There's no excuse for it. And that pushed civil justice issues to the forefront and obviously sparked major demonstrations around the country. Most of them were peaceful, but there's no question there was a lot of looting, a lot of violence, a lot of vandalism, a lot of arson as well. And we see, you know, now the center of Seattle, one of the country's great centers and economic powerhouses, literally occupied by a group of protesters. And you know, we see major changes coming in police at the local level and you know, all sorts of, again, things coming out of there. So Congress, the Senate stayed in session throughout. The executive branch stayed in session. The House did not. And I regret that as a House member. I think it was a big mistake. If the Senate can function, if the president and the vice president are in Washington, D.C., in the West Wing, not hunkered down in Cheyenne Mountain, then the House, with appropriate precautions, should be there functioning. And we have fitfully. But we've adopted some new things, I think, mistakenly, everything from allowing members to vote by proxy on the floor, something we haven't done in over 230 years, or ever, really, and restoring proxy votes under certain circumstances and remote hearings at the committee level. And so we sort of struggled on, and we go back into session next week to deal with police reform. If you look what's going forward, what the Congress has to deal with, you can break it up into, number one, the police reform issue, where there'll be a Democratic bill as a Republican alternative that Senator Scott, the African-American from South Carolina, former House member, I will tell you, is a guy that served with him, a really fine member of Congress, a really, really good person. The House will pass the Democratic bill. The Democrats and the Republicans, the Senate, will find some common ground. The president has produced a bill of his own, executive orders of his own have been released. And so out of that, I actually do believe there's a reasonable chance some good legislation will come. I've actually spent a lot of this week, I'm sure other members have done the same, talking to my chiefs of police that I represent in my district, and have a pretty good idea of what's acceptable to them and what's not. And that will dictate certainly where I'm at on the issue as we go forward and negotiate. The second area that Congress will focus on is probably a second supplemental. I think it'll be, certainly won't be $3 trillion, but it could be one to two. It'll be negotiated. There's enough things out there. The Democrats want additional money for state, local, and tribal governments. The Republicans want liability protection for reopening businesses. Both sides want to make some modifications in PPP, and we've already done some of that, but there needs to be more. I think also needs to be, in my view, additional flexibility given to state and local governments. I think both sides are a little disappointed. And this, by the way, I'm not applying to Oklahoma, but a lot of governors have sat on the money, haven't gotten the money into local governments. That's a challenge, particularly in a place like Oklahoma, where our municipalities are heavily dependent on sales tax. They don't have any income tax. They don't have property tax revenue. So that's something I think members want to work on. And then the appropriations process itself, that is the normal funding of government. The House would aim to try and get most of the bills passed before the August break. Senate probably do the same. That doesn't get us to a final solution. There'd be a negotiation in the fall. You also, the fourth area of legislative activity will be the National Defense Authorization Act. Pretty important in the state with five major military installations. We're very well situated there, obviously, with Jim Inhofe as the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. I'm a very senior defense appropriations person, and Kendra Horn in the 5th District sits on the House Armed Services Committee. And despite the partisanship, and there's certainly a lot of it this year, and we work together on defense issues across party lines from a state standpoint, I would say pretty well. And we'll continue to try and obviously do what's right first and foremost for the country and for men and women in uniform, but also make sure that these are very important economic engines for Oklahoma, continue to be robustly funded and positioned to pick up new missions going forward. We just got to see the KC-46 tanker, mission, which is trained in Altus, maintained in Tinker. Looking a few years ahead, there's a new manned bomber coming. We want to make sure that's maintained at Tinker as well. That will probably happen, but there's a lot of moving parts along the way, and important things that will happen both in the authorization appropriations process for this year. So in short order, that's kind of the main agenda from now probably to the end of the calendar year. The elections, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, there's no rules that apply here. We're actually seeing very unprecedented political turmoil here. My instinct tells me, and I'll start from the bottom and work to the top, in the House, the Republicans are actually fairly well positioned to pick up seats. I'm not saying they'll get the majority, but there's about 30 seats out there that the president carried that have Democratic members sitting in them from 2018. Those seats will probably vote for the president again. About 10, 11 of them are double-digit Republican or Trump seats. Oklahoma City of the 5th District is one of those. They're going to be real battlegrounds. But you know, again, I think the battlefield favors Republicans. They only hold, four seats that Secretary Clinton carried in her presidential campaign. So the association, close association between House votes and presidential vote, again, suggests Republicans in the battleground districts are going to have a bit of an edge. I would say the Democrats have an edge in the Senate. The Republicans will probably pick up Alabama. Now, that would get them to 54. But they've got seats in danger in Colorado, Arizona, North Carolina, maybe Georgia, although I think they probably get through and win both those. Certainly Maine, maybe Iowa. So just the math works Democrat way. I think Republicans, again, will hold the majority, but they will certainly lose seats. Finally, the presidential. Right now Biden has a lead, but he's not a particularly strong candidate, in my view. There's not a lot of enthusiasm for him. The only enthusiasm in the campaign is really about Trump, both for and against. I think he holds his base without much trouble. Those people are pretty fired up. They're going to vote. You can see it in the upcoming Tulsa rally, where 1 million people have applied for 19,000 seats. He's got to do fine there. Nothing the president can do, going to change what's going to happen in California, New York, Illinois. The Democratic base is certainly intact and very energized. It's going to get down to, again, the states in the upper Midwest. They were battlegrounds last time, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. You also have to include Florida, although the president won it last time. We were successful there in 2018, a bad year, so that looks pretty good. You've got states like Arizona and Georgia that are much more competitive than they've been in the past. I think, again, you got to say those battlegrounds probably tilt in the president's direction, Iowa too. So, again, everything I see would suggest a very hard-fought, very close election. The caveat being anything can change. Now, the president looks today like he'll have an improving economy, and I don't think people hold him responsible for the damage created by coronavirus. They'll hold him accountable on, did you recover appropriately? And, the disease itself is a wild card, or virus itself is a wild card in this process. I will tell you, as a guy that sits on the committee that funds the Center for Disease Control and the NIH and knows all these guys you see on television all the time, Redfield at the CDC, Fauci at the NIH, we're making pretty extraordinary progress, unprecedented progress on both therapeutics and vaccines. So I'm not telling you we'll have a vaccine by the end of the year. It's a lot more possible than I would have thought 60 days ago. And that may play into the election cycle, just the sense of well-being. So, and the other thing that you can never figure is an international crisis can break out at any point. Obviously, we have high tensions with China. North Koreans pulled out of a joint facility that they had with South Korea. That could heat up at any point, and we still live in the age of terrorism. So anything could happen there. And those things can impact elections in unpredictable ways. So I would just say no certainty in this election, and it could break very late and maybe even decisively for one side or the other. But everything today would point to, again, very hard-fought election with both houses in play and with the presidency very much up for grabs between the two candidates. So that's kind of a really quick overview of things, and be happy to take any questions, and certainly would welcome any comments or suggestions on the legislative front.
Hi, Congressman. It's Adrian with the OBA. Two things regarding the PPP. Wanted to make sure that you're aware that getting ready to send a letter off to the Treasury and the SBA, encouraging them to create a one-page forgiveness application for any loan that's $250,000 or less. And I think the last count, we had about 47 senators sign on to that letter, including both Senator Lankford and Senator Inhofe. And then did I understand you correctly when you were talking about further PPP clarification, it might be at the end of summer at the earliest?
Well, the Treasury might be able to do some things, you know, in the interim in terms of, but I'm talking about legislative change.
Right.
Not the end of summer, end of July. I mean, the Congress will go into recess in very late July or early August. And so if there's going to be another piece of major legislation, and there's some people that are arguing not to do it all. I think the White House, though, wants to do it, and the Democrats want to do it. So I think in the end, they'll find a way to get something done. And but there's a lot of debate over what would be in that final package. And remember, every day you move closer to an election in a year like this, the more difficult it becomes to legislate and find common ground, because you'll have various people that say, look, let's just position ourselves and blame the other side for anything that goes wrong. And that's not one of the more attractive aspects of our politics, but it's very real.
Okay. Any bankers on the line have any questions for the congressman? Congressman, another issue that we've been hearing about, more so with our rural bankers, is with the increase in the unemployment checks in both the frequency and the dollar amounts, for a lot of folks, this is the most money they've ever made in recent years, and they're having a very difficult time getting those folks to go back to work. In fact, for a lot of them, it would be a pay cut to go back to work. Any ideas or thoughts on how long you think that they'll keep the unemployment checks at this level?
I think that it will end when the program runs out at the end of July. One of the things Republicans want to do is incentivize rehiring. And Kevin Brady, who's the top Republican on Ways and Means, has some legislation. I don't see any give in the Senate or on the part of the White House in ending that extra money. So I think really, while Democrats would like to extend it to January, I just don't think there's a support to do that. It's like a prolonged recession. I mean, again, the people that are getting the benefit will be okay, but it's going to make it extremely difficult on small businesses to start back up. So, again, we'd rather incentivize people going back to work. We've effectively incentivized people not to work. And there were, you know, again, reasons for that. By and large, that's worked. We pulled a lot of people out of the workplace. We slowed the progress of the virus, and we made sure our healthcare system wasn't literally overwhelmed. That was the great fear. And it came close in a couple of places, in New York or whatever, but it never happened. And part of that is the actions that were taken. But I think people are now more inclined, certainly Republicans are. And again, this is something that runs out if Congress does nothing. So I think it's going to be very hard to persuade Republicans to extend this. And I see this more now as a bargaining chip for Democrats to get something, maybe more aid to states and localities and tribes than actually something that's likely to get extended.
Okay. Any questions? Jeremy, do you see anything on the chat? But also, Congressman, I wanted to make sure you were aware of something we're doing here at the OBA. We've partnered with the State Election Board to make absentee voting easier for all Oklahomans. Our member banks can participate in the program and offer photocopy ID services or notary services either through their lobby or drive-through or both. And we launched that a little over about 2 weeks ago, and we've had incredible support from our member banks that are offering those services to Oklahomans all across the state.
That is terrific. Really to be commended. I mean, we just had a primary election in Georgia last week. It was a bit of a debacle. And it's everything from poll workers deciding at the last minute not to go to the polls. And I can understand that. It's actually a fairly old workforce, so to speak. It's a lot of retired folks. But it's a nightmare getting the poll workers that you need. The more avenues we can provide for people to exercise the franchise, so to speak, and the more places we can do it at, the better off we're going to be. So just thank you guys for doing that. That's a tremendous public service on your part.
Well, and I am very pleasantly surprised. Last time I checked last week, we had close to 120 different financial locations across the state offering services. So that's been a very pleasant surprise. Another question we just received is that SBA borrowers received 6 months of payments. Is there anything in the works for those folks through the USDA program?
I don't know. I'm not on the relevant committees there. I'm an appropriator, so my main focus tends to be in those areas. And until it bubbles up and we're actually back on ground, I couldn't tell you that. I would not be surprised. Again, I think the tendency is here has been to be as lenient and flexible as possible. We do run the risk of abuse. I mean, like, for instance, in the unemployment area, we're getting a lot of fraudulent claims. And the unemployment offices, which are state-run, are all overwhelmed in every city. They're not used to dealing with anything like this magnitude. And so all the cracks in that system, it's like running water through an old pipe. All of a sudden, you see all the leaks and the problems. And so I appreciate the job those people are trying to do. We have a lot of people that, are eligible for benefits, aren't getting it. But believe me, we have a lot of bad actors out there as well that are committing fraud. And we have very little capacity in a lot of these unemployment offices, given how far they're running in the backlog, to actually run checks and be careful. They're just trying to take care of the claims they have. So that's a problem. But again, I think Treasury wants to be both supportive and flexible on these things. And so if there's things legislatively you want done, I think talking to the delegation would be helpful, particularly, remember, on financial services. Frank Lucas is a very senior member on that committee. And I'm not trying to direct traffic in Frank's direction. I just say we actually have a guy that has significant influence on these kinds of issues. So I would certainly hope his constituents are talking to him, and I'm sure they are.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that. I don't see any more questions in the chat. Are there any bankers that want to unmute and ask the congressman any questions?
Congressman, this is Greg Vannevar. You got any predictions on the 5th district race?
I don't know whoever is on the call, so I want to be careful, and I want to be respectful of my colleagues. But that's going to be one of the most fiercely contested seats in the country. In terms of the Republican primary, you have four credible candidates. I'd say if you're not on television, you're not really in the race. But we have four people that are. That's going to get down to two. Nobody's going to win it outright on the 30th. So there'll be a runoff there. Whoever emerges from that, and I know all four of the candidates, is going to be a strong general election candidate. So, again, I would just say that's going to be an extraordinarily competitive seat, and the president's going to carry it. I don't think there's much doubt about it, and that's going to be a tremendous boost to whoever the Republican nominee is. So, I would say Republicans certainly have a real chance for a pickup there, and they're going to focus on it. And Democrats, by the way, are throwing everything at it themselves. This was a huge win for them 2 years ago, and they certainly have a very strong incumbent, and one who works hard, is very capable, has an excellent staff, and is well-funded. So I would just say that's going to be one of the races to watch. I expect it to be. It was very close in 2018. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be comparably close in 2020.
Perfect. And one last thing, because I know you've got a busy schedule. Any help you could provide our member banks with receiving their fee payment from the SBA? I know several banks have received theirs, but the vast majority have not, and there's nothing coming out of SBA or Treasury as to who gets it, when they get it, or what the delay is. So I know if you could make that happen, we'd appreciate it, but I also know that we'd really appreciate any support you could give to SBA and Treasury to try to get that process moved along a little quicker.
I'm happy to do that. I think every member of the delegation is, and probably every member of Congress, because, but, and I, you know, again, we will bring it up. We always do with Treasury. SBA is only like a 3,200 person agency, and they've been putting out more money in loans, you know, in a day on their PPP in some cases than they normally do in a year. They normally do about $25 billion in loans. So, again, we are pushing them well beyond their capacity. I would say Treasury's done a pretty good job here, again, given its limitations. But your point's well made. Look, these programs have worked in part because of an extraordinary effort by the banking community in you know, many cases dealing with loans they don't normally deal with, reaching out to first their client base and then well beyond that. And getting this money, there are lots of Oklahomans that are able to pay the light bill, the mortgage, and eat thanks to what bankers have done and small businesses have done. So we certainly are going to do our best to try and make sure you get those payments as quickly as possible.
Well, perfect. Well, Congressman, we greatly appreciate you carving out a little time for us today. We know you've got a crazy schedule, and all the information on what's going on in D.C. and here locally is greatly appreciated. And just thank you for all that you do for our industry. We can always count on you when we need you. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you for all you do for the people of Oklahoma and keep our economy functioning. I mean, everybody's been hit by COVID, but we have a double whammy here, obviously, with the challenges in the energy industry. And I certainly see it in my district every day. And so, again, our financial institutions have really risen to the occasion, and we've gotten through this as well as we have to date because of, again, what community bankers have done and others to move money through and try and help. So, again, pat yourselves on the back and know that while you've been serving your customers and your communities, it's an enormous service to the United States of America in a time of really great crisis, and you guys are some of the real heroes out there that have helped the country battle through this.
Perfect. Well, thank you, sir, again for taking the time, and we hopefully we'll get to see you in person soon.
I believe me, I'm hoping that myself. So please take care, and all of you be safe. And if our office can be of help in any way, please don't ever hesitate to reach out. It's extraordinarily helpful to get your take on what's happening in your community and what you see in the larger economy.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, sir, and you have a great day.
You do the same. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. This meeting will be recorded, and get it on the OBA update later this afternoon.